Support for On Point and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Lift the burden of getting a home loan with Rocket Mortgage and get a secure, transparent home loan approval in minutes. Skip the bank, skip the waiting, and go completely online at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jessica Yellen in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. An explosion rocked Manchester Arena in England last night during a concert by American pop star Ariana Grande. 22 people are dead, 59 are wounded. Many are children. Now ISIS is claiming responsibility for the suicide bombing. In the wake of the deadliest act of terrorism in Britain since 2005's London public transit bombings, do we need to rethink how we protect our own large venues? Is that what ISIS wants? This hour On Point, the terror attack in Manchester, England. You can join us on air or online. What do you make of the overseas suicide blast? Why did they choose this venue? And what do you say to your kids? Join us anytime on onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining us now from London, England, is Sewell Chan, the international news editor for The New York Times. Sewell, thanks for being with us.
Hi, Jessica.
I'd like to start, if we could, by setting the scene a little bit. This is these were some of the sounds last night, shortly after that blast in Manchester. And this is one of the witnesses describing the scene after the explosion at the concert.
Massive bang.
Fire just went up in the air and we felt the heat smacked us in the face.
Which way? Come on. Why we need to get round? Why we get round this way? Come on.
And here's a witness describing the scene as well.
Bodies everywhere. It was bad, like kids and that. Teenagers and that. Lying there screaming.
Just a horrifying evening. Sewell, would you give us a sense, as we go to air right now, what do we know about the latest?
Well, 22 people were killed, and another 59 people have been hospitalized with injuries, some of them very severe. It's, of course, Britain's worst terrorist attack in many years, since 2005 in particular. One person believed to be the bomber is dead. He has not been identified. There has been a claim by the Islamic State of responsibility for the attack. That has not also that has not been officially verified yet.
And do we know how he did this attack? It was a suicide blast. There have been reports of nuts and bolts in the backpack. Is that something you've been able to verify as well?
We're digging into that very much, and we're asking some very, very precise questions about this. What's clear is that a public venue was targeted at a very vulnerable time. We often think about the security around events when people are going in. We don't think so much about events with a lot of people as they're going out. And what's clear here is that a group of young, you know, a very crowded public arena was, you know, literally emptying out of thousands of, you know, fans and young people and concert goers, and in many cases their parents and relatives. And it was this public space between the performance area and the train station next to the arena where this attack occurred.
So just to put a point on that, the attacker didn't get into the venue itself. He was standing outside the facility.
Well, he was outside the area where the performance was. He was essentially in an entrance hall or a kind of public foyer where I believe tickets are sold and there are concessions. But whether he ever was inside the performance itself is a question we're still asking.
I see. What do we know about security at this venue?
We know the bags were checked. People that we've talked to said it was not particularly rigorous, but again, we don't know yet whether the attacker ever made his way within any kind of security perimeter, so I think it's really too early to sort of ask as to whether that may have been a failure. We are asking, we're trying to research the question, but it's a little bit too early to say.
Is there any thinking you've heard about why this concert? It was an American pop star and one who attracts quite young girls to her audience.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
It's a gigantic mystery. You know, our sense from the past, these attacks is that they are discriminating in terms of trying to get victims where they are. I'm not sure that the particular singer in question, who obviously is heartbroken about this, I haven't seen any evidence yet that she was specifically, that she or her fans were specifically targeted. I think it's uniquely horrifying on so many levels, but one of them is that so many young people and kids literally in their mid-teens, the youngest victim who was killed that we know about so far was an 8-year-old girl. I think that's one thing that's extremely striking, and the fact that so many of the listeners of the fans were female as well. So there's a lot of truly devastating things here, but we only knew a few hours ago that there's been even a claim of responsibility, so it's very early to say why this event was chosen.
Yeah, this is fast developing story. With that in mind, tell us what we know at this hour about the investigation.
Well, it's sort of what I told you earlier. I mean, the British intelligence are all over this. They're trying to see whether the bomber had any accomplices. There has been at least one arrest, but it's not yet confirmed whether that had any direct connection to this attack. And it's, you know, we're only getting bits and pieces, but again, we're less than 24 hours out.
How is England reacting this morning? You woke up to headlines. Can you give us a sense what they're saying?
Yeah, I think great grief. This is a country that I think has weathered terrorism before in the 2005 transit attacks. More recently, 2 months ago, there was a guy who rammed into passengers on a bridge outside Parliament and then stabbed a police officer before he was killed. But there's a tremendous sense of grief and outrage, also a lot of praise and solidarity. The emergency responders reacted very quickly. They had been trained for kind of a mass casualty event. People were ferried to hospitals pretty quickly. A lot of outpouring of altruism in terms of people offering rooms and places to stay and free cab rides, etc. You know, you have a statement from the Queen and from Prince Charles. I would say that the society seems shaken, but also resolute.
Hmm. You know, it comes so soon after that attack outside Parliament where a man rammed people with a car and then got out and attacked. Is there a sense in the UK that this is becoming sort of a permanent reality?
Well, remember, the UK has actually been somewhat, I just want to say spared, but there's been relatively less terrorism here than, say, in France, where more than 240 people have died at the hands of terrorists since the beginning of 2015. So I wouldn't say it's become a part of everyday reality, but I think people are absorbing that, you know, terrorism, sadly, has become, yeah, part of the reality, which doesn't mean that efforts to combat it and prevent it don't need to be stepped up. They do, but these crimes have to be looked at in perspective as well.
Now, I understand, as you explained earlier, the arena is adjacent to a major train station, and I've read that they shut that train station down. Has a lot of transportation been suspended, and is the country sort of on a standstill right now?
Yeah, well, I wouldn't say the country's in a standstill. I mean, the train terminal was major, but Manchester does have other train terminuses, which are still open. It's caused a lot of congestion, for sure. Manchester is the second or third largest city in Britain, so it's of course, a very busy hub.
And let me ask you about this. There's an election coming up on June 8th. I understand it's a big election in the UK, and all the candidates have suspended campaigning, is my understanding. Will terrorism now become a major factor in this upcoming campaign?
That's a terrific question. I think it's a little bit too early to say. I would not say that it was one of the major issues before yesterday. Britain has a lot to deal with, notably the enormously complex negotiations around leaving the European Union, which was a decision that was approved narrowly by voters in a referendum last June. So I would say that's still probably the major dividing line in society, how to approach that political question. So far, I haven't seen any evidence that people are making kind of political hay out of this. It's a little bit, yeah, I haven't quite seen that yet. I've seen more or less unified expressions of condolences and an eagerness to get to the bottom of what happened.
I'm curious if there's something particular to Manchester. Is there anything you can explain to an American audience about Manchester and why it might have been selected for an attack?
I certainly would not want to speculate on that. What I can say generally is that Manchester, like its sister and rival city Liverpool, is a place of tremendous pride. As an American, I liken it to, you know, Chicago, a place that has tremendous vitality, that's seen as very kind of, you know, middle of the country, or the very, you know, very authentic. You know, the accents are regionally distinctive. Obviously, a very proud sports tradition in terms of football. A place, you know, that the people feel very proud to call home. So in that sense, I think it's been devastating. It's also been devastating because, frankly, I mean, London, the UK is a very, in some ways, a very centralized nation, and London has a very outsized and disproportionate place of power within the UK because it's the political capital, the economic capital, the tech capital, the cultural capital. So in some ways, I think although Londoners are very have a very heightened awareness of the vulnerability of terrorism, that was probably less the case for some of Britain's other large cities until yesterday.
And is there a sense there, first of all, do we expect the Prime Minister to speak again today? What do you project will happen in terms of major announcements in the hours ahead?
I mean, I can't guess on that, but she already has spoken to give an update on the investigation. We know that she was called by President Trump and they spoke. We know that she has kind of deployed the full range of British intelligence and security services to try to find out what happened here, and also to prevent any possibility of a follow-up attack.
Have you been to the site at Manchester Arena itself? And if not, can you give us a sense what security feels like at these major venues in the UK now? And is it different from, say, you know, 5-10 years ago?
You know, I can't speak that directly. I have three colleagues, I think soon to be joined by a fourth, who are in Manchester right now, but they are busy combing through the streets and talking to eyewitnesses and neighbors and other people and victims and at the hospitals, and doing those interviews so that I can be here with talking with you. I think they would say that I think in general security in Britain around public events is reasonably high, but as is the case in the U.S. as well, the balance between openness and security is an important one. You know, we already are in I work just a few blocks from the British Museum, which is, I think, the most visited museum in Britain. And already their security perimeter, even before yesterday, had been extended, and you have to go through a bag check. You know, things that have become fairly standard. Will that catch everybody? Not clear. Will there also be attempts to attack public areas that are outside of security perimeters? Probably,
we'll
yes.
Sewell, I've got to interrupt you, but thank you so much, international news editor for the New York Times in London, joining us for the latest on the Manchester terror attack in England. I'm Jessica Yellen. This is On Point. This is On Point. I'm Jessica Yellen, in for Tom Ashbrook. And we're talking about last night's suicide bombing in Manchester, England, at an Ariana Grande concert. You can join our conversation. Do you question going to big venues for events these days? What can we do to protect ourselves? Joining us now from Washington is Bruce Hoffman, a global terrorism expert and professor and director of the Center for Security Studies at Georgetown University. He is also the author of Inside Terrorism, to be published in August. Hi, Bruce. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Jessica. Thank you.
Also joining us from Kansas City, Missouri, is Michael Tabman, a retired special agent in charge for the FBI. Hi, Michael.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Thanks to both of you for being with us. And I'd like to start first by listening for a moment to what some of the leaders have said in reaction to this attack. First, this is British Prime Minister Theresa May condemning the sickening cowardice of the attacker.
It is now beyond doubt that the people of Manchester and of this country have fallen victim to a callous terrorist attack, an attack that targeted some of the youngest people in our society with cold calculation.
And speaking in Bethlehem today, here's how President Donald Trump reacted to the news.
So many young, beautiful, innocent people living and enjoying their lives murdered by evil losers in life. I won't call them monsters because they would like that term. They would think that's a great name. I will call them from now on losers, because that's what they are. They're losers.
So it's early hours and hard to know why any of this happened. But there's always the rush and the interest in understanding both location and timing. And Bruce, I'm curious, is it in your mind purely coincidental that this happened while President Trump was in the Middle East?
No, not at all. Indeed, your two clips, I think, provide very needed context. You have a British general election occurring in a bit more than 2 weeks, and we've seen over the past year and more how terrorism tragically has elbowed itself into electoral politics. And then, of course, you have this historic visit by President Trump to exactly the three epicenters of exactly what this Salafi jihadi conflict is about: Saudi Arabia, Israel, and the Vatican in Rome, which ISIS has, all three ISIS has threatened to attack and views as its, you know, unswerving enemies.
I'm curious also if you make anything of the fact that the target was at the concert of an American pop star.
Possibly too early to tell. I suspect it was more opportunistic than anything else. Clearly, you know, planned in mind perhaps to coincide with the forthcoming election, certainly perhaps piggybacking on the horrible tragedy as well that occurred at Westminster Bridge just 2 months ago in front of the Houses of Parliament, where five persons were killed. And of course, Manchester, unfortunately, is no stranger to terrorism of all kinds of stripes. It was the site of a major IRA bombing during the so-called Troubles. In 1999, a major al-Qaeda plot to bomb Manchester was disrupted. And again in 2010, another major al-Qaeda plot to bomb Manchester was disrupted.
Michael, I'm curious. We have all these security concerns, but we also see all these stepped up protections. Already, someone's written in from our website, calls himself DC. Something must be said for the myth of security in the age of terrorism. He says there needs to be a serious rethinking to how facilities are secured. Based on what you've heard so far from this, the details of this attack, is there something that could be done to prevent this sort of incident in the future?
Well, after every incident, we do an after action and we look at, could we have done something more? Did we miss something? As another speaker pointed out, did we let our security down a little bit because people are leaving as opposed to coming in? However, we must remember there's a reason we call soft targets, because we just cannot protect every area. It's just not realistic. So no matter how wide you spread that security radius, you have a hardened target, there's going to be a place where it meets a soft target. That's a choke point. And we're always going to have a place where people trying to either get in or get out of the hardened target area, and that's always going to be susceptible. So to a certain point, no, we have to accept a certain amount of risk every time we go to one of these crowded venues, knowing that we can only secure so much of the area, but there's going to be that choke point where we exit or enter the secured area into a soft target area.
Is part of the effort to move people away from standing still, standing in lines, gathering in crowds, to keep crowds moving at all times, is that a key part of making these soft targets less vulnerable?
Yes, it's part of a strategy, because we look at what the terrorist wants to accomplish. They want theater. They want to be noticed. They want to be spoken about, as we're doing now. They want to get their message out. And one of the ways of doing that is a mass casualty. The more casualties, the more coverage, the more shocking it is. So if you have to keep people moving, they're all not gathered once, it'll be less casualties. We're just trying to deter or reduce the amount of casualties that will occur. But that in and of itself will not stop a terrorist attack.
Bruce Hoffman, you know, I think about the recent attacks in Europe. There was the Paris attack in 2015, the Nice attack, the recent attack in the UK outside Parliament, and now this. Why is it happening in Europe so often and not here in this way?
Over the past 3 or 4 years, despite expectations, I think, to the contrary, ISIS has been able to build up what I would regard as a very effective external operations network across Europe, taking advantage of returning foreign fighters, inserting their own operatives throughout the European Union. And in essence, they have the network and the infrastructure to sustain attacks there, much as we saw last summer. You know, between June 13th and July 16th, there were four major ISIS-related attacks. I mean, two of them were individual killings, beheading of a priest, a horrible killing of a police officer and her partner. But then there was the massive truck attack in Nice that killed 84 persons, and also a bombing at Ataturk Airport. So there's also, one hopes that this summer isn't yet the harbinger, this attack in Manchester, of another spate of attacks this summer, such as occurred last summer.
Let's go to the phones. We have callers with their own views on these events. Bernie is calling from Fayetteville, North Carolina. Hi, Bernie. What's your comment?
Hi, Jessica. A couple of comments. First one is, you see, and I'll go ahead and call this a monster, being well thought out. Past events or past attacks have occurred in public arenas, like markets and on the street. Out there in Europe, that this targeted young children, I think basically the most innocent demographic we have on this planet. Another thing that, and honestly, I apologize, but it really goes and puts forth a big sign in everybody's face that your children are not safe.
Afraid your line is breaking up, but I take your point that it is an unusual horror that they've targeted children and that children are not safe. I'd like to go now to Dan calling from Niantic, Illinois. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jessica. I am an Iraq veteran. I think about this stuff a lot. I'm still in the National Guard. I've done local disaster responses here and there. I think about how much money we've spent on the TSA after 9/11 and how relatively ineffective they are. It's a showpiece. They create bottlenecks that people like I believe it was in Brussels, the bombers there exploited. They just waited until people were standing in line and they attacked there. Like your commenter, I'm sorry, I forget his name, said there's a lot of choke points out there. There's a lot of soft targets. And I feel like we spend a lot of money addressing our fear about our vulnerabilities instead of, focusing on how to accept the fact that you have to accept, risk and danger to enjoy a free society. And, I would like to see more from the media as well on highlighting the relative rarity of these things. They get
interesting
so much
point.
Focus.
Thank you, Dan. I appreciate that. Michael Tabman, two points there. First, I'd love to ask you, do you agree TSA is largely sort of security theater?
I actually have been not a very big fan of TSA for a long time. I think they're inefficient. I think they've been run inefficiently. But I would not suggest not having a TSA or any type of security screening. But I agree they have not been effective at what they're doing. I think the fight on terrorism is more going to come from the intelligence side, weeding these plots out before they get there. We've been unsuccessful at behavior analysis, as the Israelis have been successful at it. I'd like to see if we can do a better job at that and, being able to spot suspicious behavior effectively and looking at the technology for, deterring and stopping anything that might get on a plane. We know TSA has let 95% of, these weapons and dangerous objects on tests get through. So one has to question their efficacy. So I'm not a big fan of this, but we do have to have a physical security apparatus to stop things from getting on and being a visual deterrent.
Bruce Hoffman, is there anything you think will change as a result of this attack, something we could learn from it to apply here?
Well, I think that security of people exiting venues, as opposed to the usual security is just screening them as they enter venues, will certainly be revisited across the globe. And that seems to be one of the lessons from the Manchester attack. Even in the case of TSA and their performance, I think that it's always a case that the countermeasures have to be dynamic and have to constantly be adjusted to the threat. So I think it's always striving to improve them and to tighten them up. But, exactly as Mr. Taubman said, it's a fool's errand to think, especially in open democratic societies, that we can protect every conceivable target against every kind of attack all the time. And that goes to what your caller was discussing, is in building up the perception. I think the fact that we do react in this way is positive. These are unbridled tragedies, but at the same time, they have to be put in perspective that terrorism is infrequent, that the terrorists attempt to generate this kind of horror precisely of attacking children precisely to get this kind of attention, but we have to put that in its proper perspective.
I just want to remind the audience that this is something that Europeans are dealing with on a much more frequent basis than they have in the past. Here's a montage by the BBC of two witnesses who were in the Bataclan Theater at the time of a November 13th, 2015 terror attack that killed nearly 100 people in Paris.
I think they were just randomly shooting at first in the dark into the mass of people, just destroy.
We were quite close to the stage, just dancing, you know. We heard a bang. People were screaming, shouting, screaming. They were just firing indiscriminately into the crowd, you know.
A random massacre. It lasted a lifetime, or an eternity. It was like probably an hour.
And that sound again was of the 2015 terror attacks outside a theater in Paris. Let's go to the phone lines. Jude is calling from Nashville, Tennessee. Hi, Jude. What's on your mind?
Hi, Jessica. I'm a Brit living in the United States. I've been here in Nashville for nearly a decade, and my heart is at home today, as I'm sure you can imagine. I wanted to talk. I think that the expert on the phone, who has been excellent, spoke to the New York Times editor when he said that people in Manchester might not be used to this because it's a very London-centric country, but that's not true. And it's not just terrorism hasn't been something for British people just since ISIS came about. I'm in my 40s, and I lived under the IRA. In my life, just myself living in London, I've heard three explosions personally, and that doesn't even count all of my friends who live in Belfast. This is something that we live with on a daily basis. And that's all I was going to say to start with. But thank you so much for talking about this. I also don't think that there's any link to it being an American artist, because this isn't about America. This is about the West, and this is about a small minority of completely crazy people.
Jude, thank you for the call, and our thoughts are with you and your loved ones in England. I'd like to go to the phone now because we have Julie calling from Boston, Massachusetts. And Julie, I believe you are Israeli, am I correct?
No, I lived in Israel for 3 years, and when I can't tell you the difference between the two countries, how vast it is. When you go to a mall, your bag is searched. There's a metal detecting wand. When you're in the mall, if you have to go to a movie theater or a supermarket that might be connected, they do it again. When you go to a bus terminal, they stop every bus that goes in there. A security person walks through. I think there's a reason why you haven't seen any attacks at Ben Gurion Airport. I think when I came back to America after living there, I remember feeling very almost nervous, just like naked, going into large venues here because of the lack of understanding about what might need to happen in a post 9/11 world.
Julie, thank you for the call. Bruce, how about that? Should the U.S. adopt more Israeli-style security measures at all of our public spaces?
Israel certainly has a unique situation. It, of course, sees itself as having been at war since its founding in 1948. It's surrounded in close proximity by terrorist groups and by enemies, where it's just a matter of miles to go to a particular attack venue. So it's a very different situation. Of course, they had an enormously tragic and sustained campaign of suicide terrorist attacks between 2000 and 2005. So it's a very different situation. That said, I think Julius is quite right in saying that we will, I think, slowly move more, or that we're being pushed deliberately almost, I think, by the terrorists to move more into an Israeli mindset of having to ramp up security, having to relook and reassess security at large public venues. And I think that's quite appropriate. But I would caution against sensing that we're somehow under siege, or that somehow our societies have faced this existential threat that causes otherwise liberal democratic states to embrace very illiberal solutions to guarantee their security, because
important.
That's actually what the terrorists are trying to do.
Absolutely, an important point. And Michael Tabman, is it your view that maybe, as one of the callers point out, these are trends. They come in waves. There was a period when the UK was under constant threat from IRA attacks. That's passed. Maybe we're in another period, but it's not going to be a permanent reality?
Well, terrorism, like everything else, does go through trends. There's, you know, a theory of waves of terrorism based on what is going on in the world at the time, the spheres of influence. People think now we're in what's called the fifth wave of terrorism, and that also will change. But I'd like to, if you don't mind, get back to that thing about the Israelis for a moment.
Quickly, if you could.
Israelis, yeah, I'm familiar with what they do, and what they do is effective, and we have something to learn from them. But one, they are a different society. What works there and was tolerated and expected there may not be tolerated and expected here in the United States. So we have to look at that with, you know, a little bit of a jaundiced eye as to whether everything they do would be appropriate here.
We're discussing last night's suicide bombing at an Ariana Grande concert and Manchester Arena in England. I want to thank Michael Taubman, retired special agent with the FBI, for being with us. And we'll be back with Bruce Hoffman on the other side. I'm Jessica Yellen in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point.
Support for On Point and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, it's important to work with someone you can trust who has your best interests in mind. With Rocket Mortgage, you get a transparent online process that gives you the confidence you need to make an informed decision. Skip the bank, skip the waiting, and go completely online at quickenloans.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
This is On Point. I'm Jessica Yellen, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about the suicide bombing last night at an Ariana Grande concert in Manchester, England. Now, ISIS has claimed responsibility. You can join the conversation. Will you think twice before sending your kids into a big crowd? We're talking to global terrorism expert Bruce Hoffman. And joining us now from Boston is Ellen Broughton, a child psychologist at Massachusetts General Hospital, where she is director of the Learning and Emotional Assessment Program and Associate Director of the Clay Center for Young Healthy Minds. Welcome, Ellen.
Nice to be here.
Nice to have you with us. So let me start with the most basic question. For parents whose children are asking what happened at this attack in England, what's the most simple message you can share with them?
Well, I think one of the things you want to do is reassure them. So regardless of the age, and one of the things you want to keep in mind, first of all, is the age of your child and what they're able to comprehend. But I think the number one thing you want to convey to them is that they're safe. And I think when these sorts of things happen, there are a couple of questions that kids want to know. How does this affect me? How is this going to affect my daily life? Are the people who love me and who care for me, are they safe? And will I be safe? So the most important thing you can give to your child is reassurance that you are keeping them safe and everyone around them whose job it is to keep them safe is doing that. So I think reassurance is important. I also think this is an important time to do a lot more listening than talking. I think you want to get a sense of what it is your child has heard and spend time asking them questions about what their fears are so that you can address those fears most specifically in your child.
We have a question from a listener who's written in on Twitter. Amy McDonald says she's sending my 15-year-old on an educational European trip in 22 days. What should we tell her to protect herself? Ellen, why don't you answer that first, and then I'll put it to Bruce.
Okay, so the thing I can answer about is just how to protect herself from an emotional level. I'm sure there are other things to do for on a more physical level. But I think one of the things you want to do is to make sure, you want to make sure that your child is on a safe trip, which I'm assuming that is the case. And I think that making her aware of her surroundings, but I also think giving her a sense that you have, you know, she needs to, life needs to go on as it always has. She should enjoy herself. And then answering her questions about what her fears are. I mean, it's, you know, we go about in life assuming that our kids are safe. I think we should still have that assumption. And so I think if you have an adolescent going across into, you know, another country, I think the most important thing to do is to enter into discussions with them about their own fears and about your fears.
Bruce, if your 15-year-old were going to Europe, what would you tell her to protect herself?
Well, I think, you know, Dr. Bratton's advice is very well taken. It's to make sure that they're aware of their surroundings. And I would, you know, even go further and, you know, sort of be careful how they dress and appear, not to stand out in a crowd. But, you know, and that's, I think, good advice for ordinary crime as well, not to attract attention. But I think it's fundamentally a mindset that, you know, terrorism is something that garners a lot of attention, that creates lots of hype, tremendous media focus, but it's a relatively rare occurrence, and certainly there are many other dangers that any child and anyone traveling overseas should always be aware of.
I think that's a very good point, that we tend to overblow this, and the chances of them really coming into some kind of harm are extraordinarily slim, despite the fact that we're seeing so much coverage on this.
Right. The media focuses on it, but it's not necessarily everyday reality for
exactly.
Most. Yes, for most. Scott is on the line calling in from Charlotte, North Carolina. Hi, Scott. What's on your mind?
Hi, Jessica. My perspective is a little unique. Last year, I spent some time working, and I won't name the company, but one of the largest promotional companies that put on these big concerts. And, you know, and my concern is, what can we do to hold them accountable? Because what people may not realize is most of the security at these events is done by these promotional companies. And I know the one that I worked for, it was all seasonal part-time work. It was all minimum wage. We had to attend a three-hour orientation, and pretty much that was all the training we got. So, I mean, I hate to be a harbinger of bad news, but sometimes, you know, what you pay for is what you get.
Wow.
So, you know, what do you think about, you know, what can we do, you know, to these companies so they will emphasize this a little more? No,
got
I'm
it.
No longer working for that company because I was pretty disappointed.
Scott, thanks for the call. Bruce, what do you say to that? Security trained for 3 hours and then put on the floor to protect our kids. Do we need to change how this works?
I dare say that many of these large concert promoters are going to have to change, because otherwise they'll have people fearful of coming to their events, so that they will, in tandem, I think, with guidance from the appropriate authorities, that just to reassure the public and ensure that people are willing to come to concerts and other events, that they'll have to be demonstrable and, I think, meaningful changes to security, again, that don't completely choke off the venue or make people so fearful, but rather that assuage them that security is being taken seriously. Because I have to say, in the 40-plus years I've studied terrorism, that's often one of the most important deterrents. Terrorists strike when they perceive or when their surveillance or reconnaissance has revealed a vulnerability. When they see security stepped up, that causes them to pause and may even derail an attack, but may also delay it enough that it can be identified and interdicted and stopped.
But do you know if what the caller said is really the full picture? Surely these venues have been secured as well by true law enforcement.
Well, exactly. I mean, there's multiple layers of security. There's, you know, certainly the concert venues, and that may be more lax because there is a municipal law enforcement presence around the perimeter, sometimes inside the venues too, but certainly around the perimeter. In this day and age, no matter where you are, there are going to be local police forces on call and deployed for these events should any kind of a tragedy occur. It doesn't have to be necessarily terrorist-related. It's multi-layered, but I think the point of the caller is well taken, that people only feel as secure as they believe security is being taken seriously. And this harkens back to a previous caller who was rather critical of the TSA, and that's exactly the point, is people bristle and rightly object to security that isn't serious, that isn't effective, mm-hmm. and that will be one of the challenges going forward.
Mike is calling in from Madison, Wisconsin. Hi, Mike. What's on your mind?
Hi, Jessica. Thanks for having me on the show. What's on my mind is kind of like, I'm almost sick of all this terrorist stuff, especially all this terrorist talk. We're talking about what we can do to keep our children safe. Well, I think the first thing we have to do is give them peace of mind. They shouldn't hear terrorism, be afraid, every time a little incident like this takes place. We just talked about the fact that this doesn't happen all the time. This just comes out, they say, hey, we did this. It's a fundraiser. You know, just teach your kids to be safe. It doesn't matter whether it's a terrorist attack or if they're at a concert and all of a sudden something goes wrong and there's a fire. That happens too.
Mike, thanks for the call. Ellen, how about that? Is the media a big part of the problem, and should parents be turning this off?
I wouldn't say the media is a big part of the problem, but I think what the caller said is well taken, in that we really do need to turn off the media, especially for certain age groups of children. So young children should not be watching almost any of the news anyway. The news is really for adults. We want to know what's going on in our world. A 3-year-old, a 7-year-old, even arguably a 10-year-old doesn't really need to know a lot of these details. So I think bringing down the level of media in a child's life is important. I think that will help them curb any anxiety, because they're not going to be anxious about things that they don't know or even don't worry about that could happen. So I think that's a point that's well taken. I think when we're talking about adolescents, though, they do know, and that's where also talking to them about their fears and putting this in the right context, meaning this is still very rare. The news makes news because it's something that's very unusual that doesn't happen that often. Now, granted, this seems to be happening more often than it has in the past, but there will always be random acts of violence, and we can't let that lead us. We can't let that make us feel anxious about things that we can't control. So keeping the media, turning off the TV for particular age groups of kids in particular is important.
Ellen, let me push back on that a bit, because Ariana Grande is herself a tween icon. And, even if parents were to turn off all the news about a terror attack, I've got to believe it'll come through in social media for a lot of these kids who follow Ariana Grande. So is this a particularly difficult one for kids to process? And does that make it especially important for parents to address it head on rather than hoping they can just shut down the news before it reaches them?
Yes, and I think that is probably true for most kinds of issues like this, but particularly this unique situation is going to hit pre-adolescents and adolescents pretty hard, and they're already at a very vulnerable age of development and now feeling even more vulnerable. So the one thing you want to do is you want to talk to your adolescent, because you're right, they will know about this. You want to really talk to them about what it is they want to know, and just by asking them, what have you heard? But let the information they have launch the conversation and let them, to some extent, steer the discussion. I think it's good to kind of steer it away from getting too far into all of the facts and details, which are horrific. And I think talking more about how they feel, what this means, I think this can be a great launching pad for talking about some of those really deep discussions with this age group. But you're right, this age group will know about this. There's no question. And you have to hit it head on and talk about the fact that there are things in this world that we can't predict. Bad things happen, but they are safe, and we do everything we can to keep them safe.
Sarah is on the line calling in from Dunedin, Florida. Hi, Sarah. Are you a mom?
Hi, Jessica. Yeah, I am. I have one daughter. She's 8 years old.
And what's your comment?
I wanted to call and make a comment about when she goes to school, and I'm trying to teach her to be open-minded and accepted, but a lot of the kids, they hear their parents talking about ISIS and Muslims in general. And then when I hear, on the way to school this morning, we were listening to NPR and hearing about this. And sometimes it's just really hard to tell her that not every Muslim is bad. And when you are in a classroom with a bunch of second graders and they're talking about this, it's not easy to keep telling her that, this is a rare thing. It's not going to happen to you everywhere you go. Just because somebody is Muslim doesn't mean they're an ISIS.
Thanks for the call, Sarah. Bruce, do you want to respond to that?
Sure. Well, this is something that obviously has to be avoided. Terrorism has existed for 2 millennia and has been perpetrated by every major religious movement, some minor ones, many cults, by secular groups as well. It's a tool that's unfortunately and tragically universally embraced. The reality today, too, is that far more Muslims have been killed by these terrorist groups than Westerners. But I think the point to bring out is that really that, violence occurs for a variety of reasons in different places. It is not unique to any one group, even though there may be this focus now because of the perpetrators who have claimed credit for this act. But unfortunately, this is one of the realities of life in the 21st century, that terrorism has
even if it's not becoming more violent or more frequent, it's certainly much more amplified. And I think this goes back to Dr. Bratton's points, why we have to engage in dialogue with our students and our children and put it in a proper perspective.
Elise is calling in from New Orleans, Louisiana. Hi, Elise. What's your comment?
Hi, Jessica. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
We live in a world where people get hurt all the time. You can get hurt getting out of bed in the morning. You can get struck by lightning anytime. I taught my children when they were young to keep their heads with them and turned on at all times. But if we focus so much on keeping our kids safe and we're not letting them be free, and nobody ever said freedom was safe.
Thank you for the call. We can't live in fear. That's a big part of the lesson after all these attacks. Ellen, is that something important also to convey to the kids?
Absolutely it is. And I think the last caller also brought up another point that I think it's important for parents to consider, and that is that it's important to model good coping skills, that your children will look to you to see how it is that you deal with this uncertainty in life. And it's right, life is uncertain. And so they will look to you. So kind of stepping up your own efforts in order to model those good coping skills is important. And if you're not feeling particularly confident yourself as a parent, don't fake it. Talk to other people so that you're feeling more confident and that you're able to model those sort of skills for your child. But also talking about your own worries within reason isn't bad to discuss with your children, depending on their age. But I think that's an important point.
Bruce, as we reach the end of the hour, I'm curious, can you give us a little sense of what to expect from here? Will the FBI likely be involved, do you think, in this investigation? Do you think we'll have some clarity in the coming hours and days?
I think we'll certainly have some clarity because the London authorities or the British authorities have already identified who the individual responsible for this was. So we'll build a greater picture of what that person's motivations may have been, their connection or not to an existing terrorist organization, whether it's following that organization's direct orders or this was something they did on their own. I think I'm sure that not just the FBI, but law enforcement across the United States will be studying the Manchester tragedy for lessons on how to avert or prevent a repetition of that in the United States. So there always is this enormous learning curve, so people here will be paying very close attention.
Ellen, if you had to summarize briefly what parents should say to their kids, how would you do it?
I think letting them know that reassuring them that life is good, and I also think to make sure that consistency is very important for any age child. Keeping your routines the same, keeping life feeling like it's normal, I think is very important. And then, like I said, doing more listening than talking, I think for any age group of child is really important.
Ellen Broughton, child psychologist at Massachusetts General Hospital, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
Bruce Hoffman, global terrorism expert and professor and director of the Center for Security Studies at Georgetown, thank you as well.
You're very welcome, Jessica.
You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. And you can follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Coming up tomorrow, the president's budget is out. Though the rollout is quiet, the impacts would be huge. $800 billion slashed from Medicaid just for starters. We'll take a look. I'm Jessica Yellen, in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point.